We say that individual differences are sometimes broader than the breed differences in terms of palatability expectations. And it's like humans, you know, we don't like the same products between us. If you have three kids in the house, they all have different preferences. So it's the same with pets. And the fact is that we are looking for the way to please them in majority in order to make them eat the food, because without palatability, they won't consume what they need from a nutritional point of view.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Corbion's Alga Prime DHA P3, the algae-based omega-3 DHA to boost brain cognition, immune system, and well-being. Adding it to pet food is easier than ever. Biorigin, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Complete solutions for every pet diet. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet. Young Generation Oral and Gut Health Solutions with antibodies from egg yolk. IGY technology. Research-driven. Pet-approved.
Welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast, brought to you by Wisenetics, where we'll take a deep dive into the science, trends, and innovations shaping the way that we feed our pets. Whether you're a pet owner, an industry professional, or simply interested in learning more about what goes into your pet's diet, this space is for you. I'm your host, Dr. Kate Shoveler. I'm a professor of companion animal nutrition at the University of Guelph, with a background in comparative animal nutrition and a passion for understanding how evidence-based approaches can improve the health and well-being of our pets. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. On today's podcast, we have Dr. Amira Mehanajic, Director of Research and Pet Food Palatability at Symrise. Amira will discuss the importance of considering palatability in pet food with us today. Of course, palatability is a key pet and owner perception that plays a key role in the acceptance of products. And so I'm excited to take a deeper dive into this topic today. Welcome, Amira.
Thank you. Thank you, Kate. I'm really very excited to be here today and to share with you my knowledge. And thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us. Well, maybe if we could just start, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself to the listeners.
Yeah, with pleasure. So my name is Amira, and I am a research director for pet food in Symrise company, and in charge of what we call the palatability business line. I have arrived in the pet food 10 years ago, and previously I was working on the human great food and with humans. And my specialty is sensory science and the way we can predict sensory answers by instruments and instrumental measurements. So I'm very happy to be here and share with you about the pet food world and the way we use all of this knowledge in that case.
Yeah, thank you. Well, of course, I think it's fair to say that we also believe that our pets need tasty food because we like tasty food as well. And so this is not only humanization, but it's us believing that our pets are enjoying the things that we give to them as well. So I'm really excited today as well to learn a little bit more. So maybe we could start with just the top line. What is palatability?
Yeah, it's a good beginning, that's for sure. So palatability is defined as the capacity of food to stimulate pets' appetite and to make them consume it and to be satisfied with it. If I find for the synonyms of that word, we can speak about delicious, yummy, tasty, and these ones are all describing what we call the palatability.
Interesting. Okay. So if we take one dive deeper on that too, does that palatability change over time in dogs and cats?
Yes, indeed. First of all, cat is not a dog. That's for sure. And they indeed have different preferences. And their preferences are changing along their life. And I would even say that they are changing from the uterus. So it's something that is kinetic and dynamic, let's say. And that's something that we in reality can measure and can follow.
Okay, so thanks for going through what the kind of broad definition of palatability is and how that changes over a lifetime. But when we think about the pet owner, how do we understand how the pet owner factors palatability into their purchasing habits?
In reality, it's happening at the second stage. First of all, the pet owners, when they are buying a new product that they don't know, actually, they will look at the packaging and see from the nutritional point of view if it's really convenient for their pet. Is it for sterilized or not pet? Is it for young or senior pets, etc.? And at that moment, their decision is taken on the basis of the claims. And sometimes it's because the vet told them that it should be more convenient for them. Then they come home with their bag or a packaging of these kibbles or wet food or whatever, and they present this food to their pet. And that's the first moment where they can see what's really happening in terms of behaviors of their pets. If there is some refusal to eat it, it's quite easy for them to see that. This is something which is quite frustrating for them. So for us, palatability is really impacting what we call the repurchasing decision, because they have observed the behavior of their pet. They know if there was excitation or not, if there was enjoyment or not. And this is the way the pets are really influencing their pet owners. They don't have the purchasing decision, but the pet owners listen to them during that time.
Absolutely. I think we used to, when I was with Procter & Gamble, we would describe those as the first, second, and third moments of truth in terms of consumer sales. So that suggests that palatability is very important to the pet owner, although they might not describe it like that. They're going to describe it as the amount that their dog or cat likes the food or is excited about eating the food. So when we think about that, what is the pet owner actually looking for? Are they very good at discerning palatability?
It's a very good question, because many studies asked directly pet owners about the criteria that decided them about the positive or negative palatability of the pet food. And when they declare it, they can utilize more than 100 verbatims to describe what is positive or negative for their cat or dog. The fact is, that it's not really something that is seen by themselves during the feeding of their pets. So if you really want to know in which way they see the satisfaction, what is important, it is to make them really try the food and describe what's happening during that time. And in that case, I would say that they are quite capable of seeking the good answers and telling if their pet is wagging tail or running to the ball or being concentrated to it or sitting down. And they are quite robust in their answers, in fact, and really able to describe what's happening. So I would say that between their declaration, there is a lot of vocabulary which is not already applied in a real life situation, but in a real life situation, when they are in front of the food with their pet, they are capable of explaining what's happening and if the pet is liking or not the food.
Okay, interesting. So that's good. That means that our palatability measures align with the desired perception that the consumer has too. So that's quite critical. So when we think about that and we think about consumers, are there any other factors that can affect their expectations around their perception of palatability?
Yeah, indeed. Well, there are many of those because the consumers are influenced by their environment, as the pets are. And for example, they can be influenced by what they are reading on the packaging. If the packaging is mentioning the relaxing effect of the food, they may be impacted by that and expect their pet to be relaxed after the food. And this expectation can also impact the pet's behaviors because they know if the pet owner has some expectations to them. So they are impacting their pets. That's the reason why when testing pet food products, if we really want to know what are the natural behaviors of the pets, we don't give the information about the product claims to the pet owner in order not to have that effect on pets too.
All right. Well, that's kind of the aspect of them observing their pets and their behaviors and interpreting palatability. But does the pet owner have any ability to ascertain the palatability without presenting it to an animal? So do they evaluate the smell when they open the bag? Are pet owners doing that at all? Or are they merely feeding food and not smelling it as an example? And maybe they do other things. I know that pet owners, we've gotten a lot better at things in the pet food industry. So, maybe 20 years ago, you would find fines or cracked kibbles and things like that at the bottom of your bag. That's fairly rare to happen now. So they were sensitive to things like that. But do they smell their dog or cat's pet food? Do they smell it more than the one time they open the bag? These kinds of questions, I'm just curious about what the consumers doing.
Well, first of all, I do, but because I'm working in sensory analysis and it's a sort of reflex. But let's be serious. In reality, the way they are observing the pet food is quite different from one pet owner to another. Some of those are checking that it's not smelly, too much smelly. For example, when they have small spaces where they are providing food to their pets and living in the same place, they do not appreciate having too smelly foods in their salon or kitchen or whatever. Others are checking with the smell and aspect that it's corresponding to what they are seeing on packaging and to what they are expecting from food. And in that case, they are observing it. They also watch for as we are speaking about the pet food, it's not just about kibbles, it's also about the wet food, it's about treats. So in function of the type of the food, their expectations are different. And for example, we know that they don't like too much contact with the wet food in pouches. So they check if the texture is smooth enough and coming to the bowl where they are presenting the food. So yeah, I would say that they have the connection, the sensory connection with the food, but more or less with different reasons.
Interesting. Okay, so now we've talked a bit about the consumer. Let's now go down into the experience that the dog or cat is having with palatability. So when we think about the food, what food-based variables could affect palatability?
So as I told you, there's different types of food because kibbles and vet products, for example, are not made in the same way. So if you are sterilizing the wet food, the palatability will be impacted by this treatment. And for kibbles, when making the extrusion of kibbles, of course, this will impact and make some reactions inside. So the palatability is related to the process of making the food, of course. It's related also to the ingredients which are used, because there are interactions between those and reactions which are done. And of course, it's related to the packaging which is used to package the product, because there may be some exchanges with the oxygen or not, following the packaging which is used, with more or less oxidation of the product. So all of these factors are impacting the palatability by the end.
Okay, so that's the food-based variables. What variables with regards to the animal? So do different, are there clear variables that are animal-based that change the dog or cat's perception of palatability?
Yeah, in reality, we consider that the palatability is a sort of synergy between the pet and the food. And the pet has its own anatomy, his own sensory equipments. And these sensory equipments are evolving with age. So indeed, you need to provide them the palatability, which is related to what they perceive and can perceive. The second thing is that pets have their innate preferences and also the preferences that they acquired with experience. So this is also something that impact their palatability preferences. And that's why we say that individual differences are sometimes broader than the breed differences in terms of palatability expectations. And it's like humans, you know, we don't like the same products between us. If you have three kids in the house, they all have different preferences. So it's the same with pets. And the fact is that we are looking for the way to please them in majority in order to make them eat the food, because without palatability, they won't consume what they need from a nutritional point of view.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I talk to my class in pet nutrition and my graduate students about this as well, how it's very dangerous in some ways to maintain a single taste profile for a pet over a long period of time. It makes them less and less open to considering new flavors. And so if you can change foods and change palatants around or change flavors around, that might help you later on with their acceptance if you have to move them to a different food. So it's something I think that not only manufacturers should think about, but pet owners as well. Now, when we dive a little bit deeper in dog and cat, are there any huge differentiators between how dogs and cats perceive the palatability of their food?
Yeah, indeed. First of all, from sensory equipments, they are quite different. We always say that dog see the food through their nose, because the olfaction is very important for dogs. They have the olfactory equipment, which is very developed. They use 10% of their brain to interpret the olfactive signals, while the humans use only 0.3% of it. So you see the difference. And we know that they have a very big diversity of olfactory receptors that are capable of seeing, let's say, stimuli which are quite various. They are even capable of predicting some events, because they can smell at long distances some pheromones, for example, or signals left by the other dogs or species. And for cats, contrary to dogs and humans, we have the specificity which is related to their taste buds. In fact, we know that cats can perceive salty and sour, bitter and umami flavors, but not the sweet ones. The researcher considered that it's related to their carnivorous nature, and that's the reason why they maybe did not need to have the receptors which are connected to the sweet compounds to be perceived. So they are quite sensitive to amino acids, to glutamic acid, for example, who is bringing umami flavor. And they don't really like some bitter compounds, bitter perceived as humans. I don't know how they really perceive it. And this is their specificity. We know that when preparing palatable food for dogs and cats, we won't have the same palatability enhancers to use, because they don't perceive the taste in the same way. And from the olfactory point of view, they don't perceive the odor in the same way. And they are not seeking for the same composition, in fact, when smelling and tasting their food.
I don't think that I really thought a lot about enhancing that umami flavor before. And now you've got me really, really thinking about amino acids and cats, which I spend the majority of my time thinking about. So that is all very interesting. We've talked about what the consumer perceives of the pets they own. We've talked about the factors that are both diet-based and pet-based that affect palatability. But we really need data to make decisions in general in the food industry. So how can we measure palatability of pet food for both dogs and cats?
Yeah, you're right. We need data because they still don't talk. So it's better being able to work on the data who can be objective and who can be easy to interpret. So since the beginning, the palatability was measured through the consumption of pets, because if they don't eat, indeed, it's quite easy to see the signal of the refusal. However, the differentiation between food can be related to their acceptance. So when measuring the acceptance of food, we can propose to them one bowl and see what is finally the ratio of consumption that they have during that consumption. We can also see if the pet is finishing his bowl or not, and what is his speed of consumption. That's what we call the liking test. And we can also measure, and this is the reference test for the pet food market, the preference between two diets who are proposed to them. This preference test of, or what we call paired comparison test, is the one that is used the most, because when proposing a food to a pet, two different diets, he is in the same conditions, in the same physiological state. So it is easy to compare his preferences in these controlled conditions. And in that case, what is measured is their first choice, because you can see quite easily if they are going to the bowl A or bowl B. And it's also their ratio of consumption, because they are eating in the two bowls that are proposed to them, and we can see in which one they are eating more and which diet is winning. And this is the way we can measure that. We can go even further, because, for example, if you propose to your cat in ad libitum to eat a diet, the cat will come back to the food many times. In that case, we can measure the dynamic and the kinetics of that consumption and see if a cat ate more at the beginning, for example, and then just stopped, or if cat came several times. And this is something that can bring the information about the society effect of the food too. And I would say, if we go even further, as we spoke about the pleasure, the delicious aspect of food, we can even measure the enjoyment during the food consumption of our pets. And in that case, it can go through the behavioral analysis, of course. But there are many existing sensors today that can help us measure, for example, the heart rate variation of our dog when he's excited with the food or not. We can measure their eye temperature, as it's the case with the human food, where you can see if the temperature is getting higher, that something happening about it, sort of excitement. So there are many ways of measuring it. But I would conclude that the most representative today in the pet food is still this paired comparison test, which is also the most robust one that we see when we compare them.
Absolutely, absolutely. I imagine, too, we see all these really interesting applications of AI and machine learning in pet. Somebody's got to be looking at putting a camera on food bowls and measuring smiles or eye flickers and things like this. There's got to be people working on that. So you can literally feed them from another country or halfway around the world and feel like you're interacting with them and making them happy. I'm sure that is coming very soon. When you measure and look at different palatants, you use these measures, and then that's for palatants that you're working on and then foods that you're working on. But how should pet food manufacturers define where they want that palatability? So are they going, you know, is it base kibble with no palatants enrobed on the kibble? I'm using kibble as the example here because wet food's a little bit more homogenous. But what do you do? How do you do those experiments? Are you looking for an improvement in palatability? So it's an existing product and you're trying to improve it. What is the general way that companies will target how palatable their food is or whether they need to make their food more palatable?
Yeah, it's a very good question. In reality, we never watch the palatability enhancer alone because you need to test it on food, applied on food. Alone, it has no sense to be tested. So it's always a question of interaction. Pet food matrix with the palatant who is corresponding. And not all of the palatants are corresponding to all of the matrices. So that's the first thing. When the pet food companies are trying to position themselves, in reality, they always make what we call the benchmark tests, where they are considering their product related to his positioning on the market, and they compare it in these versus trials to other benchmark on the market. And we know that if there is no palatant, this is the lowest level of the performance. 100% of cats refuse to eat a kibble if there is no palatant on it. So we know that it's really the basic information. And that's the reason why the palatability enhancers exist. It's because it's quite difficult to bring animal to the kibble if there is no palatability enhancer on it. Even if you put the fat alone, it's still not working. So that's what I would recommend as a base. And then comparison to the benchmarks where the pet food is positioned. And today, the best way to do it is to make the paired comparisons, because in that case, you can really see the gap existing between products, the gap in the ratios of consumption, for example. And there are a way of ranking products. We use some mathematical models to rank them all, in order to be able to see who is the winner and who is the one who is the best, who is the less performant in palatability. So that's the way they are doing.
Okay. So then how are these palatants companies, or how can palatant companies or suppliers support the pet food manufacturers in achieving these goals? Clearly you have knowledge of the chemical composition of your palatants, which I understand is quite proprietary for most of the palatant companies. And then you work to pair match that with the pet food?
Well, in reality, there must be a match. Either it is for kibbles or for the wet food. So we don't use the same palatability enhancers for the kibbles and for the wet food because they are not treated in the same stage of the process. For example, in the wet food, most of the time, I would say 100% of time, palatability enhancer is put before sterilization of the product in order to assure the safety of that one. So this means that the palatability enhancers needs to be sufficiently resistant to that sterilization. And this resistance can be the way to preserve the flavor, but we can also use some precursors in order to be sure that during the sterilization, the aroma will be liberated. While for the dry food, the palatability enhancers can be coated. This is the way it's mostly used. And in that case, from the beginning, the flavor must be already developed and there to bring the appetite coming to the pets. So we don't use the same palatants. We check the way the matrix is prepared, and we check the way it will be applied on the matrix, because some palatants can be applied in the inclusion, being included directly in the food. Others will be coated. And in function of what the pet food manufacturer is doing, we are trying to guide them through different palatability enhancers of interest for them.
Interesting. So how do you then develop or design these palatants? Do you reverse engineer them in essence from the dietary matrices? I'm just curious what the innovation process is.
Well, in reality, not, because from the beginning, the work on the palatability enhancers was done in order to valorize the products which are not used for the human food. So from the beginning, and it's still the case today, we've used, for example, chicken livers or pork livers or some viscera and some fats which are necessary to bring the flavor. And these ones are still used, in fact, in the palatability enhancer manufacturers today. And there is evolution today, because as you know, we have some sustainability goals and using the animal products, even if it's in the circular economy, won't be sufficient to feed humans in the 15 years and pets too. So we are preparing for that period, and we are trying to get larger ranges of raw materials in order to be ready to this evolution of the pet food market, which means that we are also integrating as raw material some plant material, some yeasts, for example, and mushrooms and other materials that can replace animal origin ones. So I would not speak about re-engineering, because it's really not it's not made in that way. But however, when developing palatability enhancers, we need our customers to work with us, because if they want to have palatability enhancers who are corresponding completely to their needs, we need to co-develop it together. So this is something that we propose as a service, this co-development. Not all of them want it, of course, but this is the way we match the best their needs when developing new palatability enhancers.
Fantastic. Well, maybe my last question really is, when those companies come to you, what are the parameters that they need to bring to you to consider the palatability or the palatant that you may suggest for their products? What kind of information are you looking for?
So when they are coming to us, first of all, we need to understand what is their benchmark. What is the positioning of their product? What are they trying to reach? Some of them are trying to reach better performance. Others are changing their formula and would like to have the same performance as previously. Some others are looking for specific claims, for example, the claim of natural preservatives or the claim of natural completely. Some of them are also trying to claim species, for example, completely poultry-based products or whatever. So in function of their positioning, of the claims they want to achieve, and of course the price they want to put on the palatability, we consider all of those and propose them the palatability enhancers who are related to their needs.
Excellent. And that will really bring them down to selecting the best palatant solution for the products that they offer.
Exactly. Excellent.
Well, I really love the mutual approach. The business-to-business interaction, I think, is critical in such a complex industry as well. So thank you very much for speaking with us today about palatability. If our listeners would like to speak to you at Symrise and get direction on palatants and palatability, how can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, of course they can contact me. I am available on our Symrise Pet Food webpage, as well on LinkedIn. Most of the case people use LinkedIn for the professional connection. So just don't hesitate to contact me. My email address is there. And of course, we are this podcast. I hope also we will have some comments and need to connect. So I will be available to respond to it with pleasure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that. But you're not quite over. I have a couple more questions.
Yep.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
ICC Animal Nutrition, adding value to nutrition. Trow Nutrition, the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending. Kemin Nutrisurance is your pet food and rendering partner every step of the way. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Wilbur Ellis Nutrition, we partner with a purpose. Benefits consumers want, partnerships you need. Schooler is your all-in-one partner for an innovative pet food supply. With an expansive portfolio and global access, we can source and deliver in-demand ingredients year-round. Schooler provides access to ingredients that are animal and marine ingredients, nutrient-rich, clean-label, plant-based, freeze-dried, sustainable, MSC and Marin Trust certified, and more. That means you can offer on-trend products consumers want without disrupting production. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet.
So first, if somebody is responsible for understanding the palatant, for example, palatant choices that they're making for their company, do you have a reference that you would highly recommend that they have on hand?
Yeah, of course. First of all, we have a fantastic blog named Appetizer. And if you want, I can send you the link so that it can be put in the comments of this podcast, in which are made a lot of syntheses about what palatability is and how it works. And there are very, very nice infographics related to that. So I would really recommend for those who need to know more to go there. We also have our webpage for the Symrise Pet Food, where we are developing what are the products that we can use with our customers and where they may have some more information about it. And of course, what I really appreciate, it is the summaries that we can have and the podcasts that you are preparing, because I found that it's very, very rich in information, and I really recommend it too. So these are the sources I can recommend to them.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure that they post those resources when they post this podcast. Second question, dogs or cats?
I would say that those that are the most difficult to understand for us are cats. And I'm very curious about them. I really enjoy working with them. But at home, I'm more dog.
Interesting. I also think cats are incredibly fascinating. And finally, in your opinion, what sets a successful pet food industry professional apart from those that are less successful?
Yeah, I would say that the first factor of success is innovation. And the facility to adapt to the changes. We are all living in a huge uncertainty, and being able to adapt to the expectations of the market, to the expectation of the society, and of course to the evolution that we are facing in sourcing, for example, or in different crises that the pet food sourcing is facing, it's essential. So their capacity to innovate and to be with their products ready to answer to these challenges is the essential.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. This has been absolutely so much fun. This concludes another episode of the Pet Food Science Podcast presented by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please leave us a review because your feedback is invaluable. Until next time, I'm your host, Dr. Kate Shoveler, and I'm signing off for today.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.